Hey y'all, it's Dally Thomas with Red Dirt Merch. Today we've got Texas country artist Jason James.
A day said goodbye, I hung my head and cried. For everyone knows I'm a fool for you. Killed me to see you go, but you said it had to be so, and it seems like tears ago. Tears ago, I don't know when, lost track of time, busy your love grew cold. I don't recall when, though. Oh, but it seems like tears ago.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
Hey, Dally, how you doing?
Oh, not too bad, man. Not too bad. Just hanging in there.
Well, good, man. You're staying safe during the pandemic, huh?
Oh yeah, we're all trying here. For those who haven't heard of you and your sound, can you tell us a little about yourself and how you got started in the Texas country music scene?
Well, I've been called a lot of things, but I'd like to consider myself maybe traditional country music. I don't know, man. I grew up on it my whole life, and when I was maybe like, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, I started getting into rock and kind of strayed away. I was still listening to Buck Owens and stuff like that, but it was secretly. I wasn't telling anyone around it about it. And in my 20s, I moved back from Austin. My band broke up, and I had a rock band, and we actually had some talks with major labels and stuff, and I walked away from it, and I had in the meantime started hanging out with my dad again, who I hadn't seen in a while, and he showed me Hank Williams again, man, and it was just something that blew my mind. And I thought, as a songwriter, it was just something that kind of spoke to me a little bit more, and I moved right into country music. And then I moved back to Austin, and then within a year or so, my mom was sending demos out to record labels, and one of them got back to me, and that was the owner of New West Records, the indie label, and they signed me on to do a record, man, and we did, and here I am now, two records in.
Well, that's awesome, man. How would you describe your sound?
Definitely rooted in the traditional sense. I've seen a lot of people say that it's more interpretive work than original, which I disagree with them. I think I'm just coming from I'm writing new music and new songs in an older format. To me, I feel that it's a little more organic than a lot of the beat machines and stuff that they're using today, so there's no auto-tune on my records. Yeah, I'd just say deeply, it's rooted in the more traditional Americana, rootsy type thing. I wouldn't say Americana is the way everybody looks at it now, you know, with electric guitars and stuff, but it's definitely more classic era.
Yeah, I can tell your sound, it's brought back that old classic country sound that there's so few artists that not only cover, you know, like Hank Williams songs and stuff, but actually write some original songs themselves that have the same type of twang to it.
Definitely, man.
Other than, you know, Hank Williams and stuff that I can already tell is some of one of your inspirations, could you name a couple more inspirations that kind of brought you up?
Well, like I said, it was mostly country, and especially whenever I tried to enter this this whole thing. You know, when I was growing up, I was, you know, I was listening to Waylon and Merle Haggard, and my dad and them basically forced me to, forced it to listen to it, to be honest with you.
Right.
So the first chance I could get to rebel, it really, that was the first thing I got. And then I was, you know, I was getting into bands like Nirvana and Butthole Surfers and getting deeper into punk rock. That's really originally kind of what I was doing. And then it started kind of getting a little more, not so dismal punk, and it started becoming more melodic, you know. But the band, you know, rock bands, they don't tend to have a very long expiration, you know, they got an expiration date on them. And I felt, you know, and it's so funny too, because most people, like, how do you not feel trapped in what you're doing in country music? Because you would seem like you would be more limited artistically than you would in rock.
Right.
And I just don't feel that way. I never get tired of, I don't know, B.B. King had a 80-year career, you know, he lived a long time doing within those realms. I think it's possible to do that, but a lot of the influences I had growing up were still Buck Owens, and God, I used to watch them on those, the TV shows. My dad had all the reruns on them and stuff, and that's just what I love. It's in me, you know?
Well, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I mean, you got to get started somewhere, and then, like you said, with your rock band and everything, and then transitioning from that to talking with your dad with some Hank Williams. I guess it was just meant to be with your voice.
Well, I'll be honest with you, man. I truly don't think I ever loved rock and roll. I don't think that I think I was trying to find myself. I was incredibly lost when I was younger, and I was in trouble a lot. It, you know, music saved me, so I can't be too mad about it. But yeah, man, getting back into the early 20s, man, Hank Williams just spoke to me on a level that, you know, was almost the same way as, you know, the first time I heard, you know, Nirvana. It was just the songwriting. It was very simple, except these were actually making more lyrical sense to me than just, you know, art.
Right.
But, yeah, man, definitely got into Hank Williams and stuff. But as I've gotten a little older, I've gotten more into the writers of a lot of those 60s too, man, like Dallas Frazier, and I like Dallas Moore too, by the way. He's a great singer-songwriter. But like Dallas Frazier, people like that, I don't know, man, there's so many aspects to the to country music. There's the writer and there's the performer.
Right, right.
I used to think Conway Twitty wrote all of his own songs, or George Jones did too, and it was kind of disheartening. Whenever I found out they were just kind of singers like George Strait, I was like, what? Oh, so they're just faces to sell the product?
Exactly.
But
you've released multiple albums, including your most recent album, Seems Like Tears Ago, in 2019. How has your experience been in recording and releasing your album so far?
You mean like how was the studio? Or like,
yeah. Yeah, how was the studio and just the recording process? Was it difficult in transitioning from, you know, just playing gigs and stuff to, did you have to do multiple takes in the recording studio to get the actual sound down that you wanted to?
Oh, I got you, yeah. No, man, actually it was quite organic. Art... especially recording with John Evans is pretty much one long drinking session. we were laughing about it, cause there was a couple of, there's one or two takes that I have no real recollection of really doing it. And I remember getting mad in the studio, cause I was like, I don't like this song anymore. I kind of want it out. And, John was like, okay, we'll just sleep on it, you know, and come back in here tomorrow, you know? And if, you know, we listen to it and you don't like it, we'll take it off. And it ended up being, you know, Foolish Heart, which is on there, which ends up being one of my favorites to play. No, man, it was just kind of, John kind of got out of the way. He's got a way to steer the ship without being domineering in a way that's not conducive to how musicians usually are. So he gets it.
Right.
When I recorded with Gaddis in Nashville for those, I mean, it was, I was so scared because, you know, I'd pretty much been plucked. It was the first major studio thing I'd ever done. And, you know, you've got all these cats on this record that are in Randy Travis's band. They played with George Jones. They played on these major tracks. You know, they're Dwight Yoakam's band. So to me, it was like, oh, man, they just plucked me from Texas City, a little place in the country down here by the Gulf, and put me in this huge studio.
Right. Threw you in with the Sharks.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was major leagues all of a sudden. I'm not saying that recording with John's not, because we've got some of the best on there. I guess I've gotten used to it.
You recorded with John on this most recent album, seems like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I did all of the songs with him on this one. The first one, he did all of them except I've Been Drinking More, Here Comes the Heartache, and like two others.
Well, dig in a little deeper into your Seems Like Tears Ago album. Can you tell us a little about the Seems Like Tears Ago song and your message behind it?
You know, man, I try to write from a universal aspect. I really write as plainly and without being too cliche. That's the real magic of listening to Hank Williams, is that you're listening to these, essentially, they're kid songs. But they're good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, that was what really captured Hank Williams for me, was these really clever and simple lyrics, but really meaning something. And George Jones has that effect, too, and so does Conway Twitty, but I use those two in comparison as far as, to me, delivering in a very laconic way, you know? It's straight to the point. So I feel like all these songs were, I might not have lived every one of them out, but I feel like I was able to become the character in there. And that's what's kind of crazy about being the songwriter, is you're the writer and the director and all of this combined, especially, you know, if you're going to be the singer of it too. So they're all just stories. And I feel that I find more and more, maybe it's just because of the places I play, but not only that, just everywhere, you know, I've been finding that people relate to it, you know, it's real life. It's somebody's real life. Now, sometimes it's always a nightmare. And I try to, you know, with this album too, Seems Like Tears Ago, I tried to not just do a bunch of really sad, depressing songs, but like to me, right. The Cry on the Bio is not really all that sad. I mean, it's supposed to, I don't know, but I've got a weird sense of humor.
No, I mean, a bunch of them are sad songs, but I guess everyone, it just depends on what your situation is. Someone could listen to it and be like, hell yeah, that's my song, that's not sad, that gets me up and going in the mornings, or someone says, oh, hell, that gets me depressed.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just depends on where you're at in life, too, you know, and some people can't relate to it, some people can, but I always try to keep a really nice beat behind it, too. I try to keep them pretty. Some of these lyrics are pretty mangled and, I guess some would say, tortured, but I try to keep the music pretty.
Right. So, what's been the most difficult part of your career as an independent country artist so far?
At first, it was ego. I'm gonna go out there, man. I'm gonna be completely honest. I wasn't where I thought I should be. I tried to rush things too much. You know, growing up, I always wanted to be on the radio. I always felt like, not a sense of entitlement, but a sense of I'm gonna do something. But I'm gonna earn it to do it. You know, and. You know, life has a funny way of not giving a hell about your plans. So you just gotta, my biggest lesson that I've learned is to evolve and be fluid with the music industry, because it's ever changing. It's never the same. It's always changing. So you hear a success story from someone from 10 years ago and it's not the same way anymore. So your story is your story. I just learned to just chill out. I don't really care about fame anymore. I don't care about being on a big record label. That doesn't bother me anymore. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's a lot more free to kind of do whatever you want, because if you do it right, you're not starving as a musician. A lot of people get this I've had family members, and I just shut it down immediately because they, oh, your little career, and I said, excuse me, you know, just kind of like I never get mad or anything. But they're like, what? And they're like, why don't you try out for The Voice? And why, because I'm probably making more money than you do in a year. I don't want to go to The Voice,
right?
And, you know, and that's another thing too, is like people try to, in this business, they make money off of your dreams. And as long as the dream's alive, you're going to keep throwing money at it. And it's an addiction. And people don't realize that, you know, you can make money and do things your own way, man, and just learn the business, try to learn some of the business aspect of it. But that's kind of been what the hardest part was that, you know, you're not going to just have it handed to you and be an overnight success and be this huge, big thing. You know, it's, you got to work for it, just like everything. I think it's awesome. I think it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Now I don't care two squats about if somebody comes and offers me this golden apple, this golden ticket. It's like, no, I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, I love it.
No, man, I agree with you totally. And even those people that go on The Voice, you know, that they have these small dreams and then they get famous so quick that all these industries are throwing their money at it and they just crush their dreams because there's so much pressure from fans and media and everything that come along with it that just it makes the artist feel like it's more of work than enjoyment in their life.
You know, and I don't want to ever go to a place where I would be bombarded by people. Like, that doesn't get me off. That doesn't, like, me becoming a better person is what I want to do now, or get better at my art. Like, I don't want to be a star. I don't want to walk into a room and I don't have the personality for it. And I would not survive under those kind of circumstances. I just know I wouldn't. So I've ran from it. I've probably done some stuff where I've shot myself in the foot at times, you know, that's kind of squandered some of what would be a bigger career, but it doesn't bother me anymore. No. Like, if I could get to the point in 10 years, 15, whenever it happens, where I'm selling out Green Hole in Texas two nights in a row, to me, that's success.
Yeah, no, I love your outlook on that, man. And I agree with you totally. As long as you're happy and you're loving the state that you're in, doing what you love to do, I don't think there's like a amount of money or fame that could, you know, ever change that.
No, man, there's not. And you get up there, and I've learned it secondhand. In fact, you know, a lot of those Elvis stories and George Jones and Hank Williams and all of those stories are lessons, you know, on what not to do. But Waylon Jennings, like, you see all these really, and they've all had really bad problems, you know, and it's like, what's more money in the bank going to do? What is that going to do for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've really fallen back to, you know, the punk rock philosophy about it, and really getting to it. A lot of country boys philosophies are like this. It's one and the same in a lot of ways.
Going on to another subject, can you tell us a little bit about your writing process?
Yeah, man. This is probably going to sound incredibly pretentious, but I was talking to a friend about this earlier. I was talking to my buddy Jake Penrod about this. He's another great country singer that's doing the traditional thing. And he's always sending me songs, and he's almost very... It's formula to him, and it is to me too. He's another one that's kind of like me, though. But some people can sit down in an office and write, and I can do that. But it's stressful. I've gotten to where I can't help it. It's something possesses me, and I write. I don't know where it comes from. I have a few drinks, you know. Start smoking on the back patio, and I get out of my way.
Right.
I just get out of the way. And you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's such a cop-out because, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, no, man, I think songwriting is the closest thing to magic that I've never seen one person describe it perfectly. I've never really seen somebody describe it in the way that I feel it is too. It's just like, it comes from nowhere. And yeah, I've spent a lot of time on studying other songwriters and, you know, practicing my craft, you know, but I've just built the tools for them to actually come and pay the visit. So when the Muse does pay a visit, I've got a place for the songbird. But to me, I'm going to get up today and have a cup of coffee and then go write a song. Like, I can do it. And I've written some of this album off that, but it's boring.
Right.
I found I like to go out on the back patio and open up a bottle of Jack Daniels. I'll sit out there for a little while. I'll listen to tunes. I'll get right. And maybe have a few beers or something. And I'll just pick up the guitar and I'll just get out of my way.
No, yeah. Having this podcast and asking the same question to multiple other artists, I don't think I've ever heard, you know, the same answer twice.
Closest thing to magic there is, man.
Right, exactly.
That's actually real magic. It's not that hidden rabbit up your butt trick. I mean, it's like, dude, this is like... I mean, and everybody's got a different way to do it. Some people are just complete savants that just, you know, and then some people work better under a pressure cooker where they have to work under fluorescent lights all day, and they're a craft. There's a song crafter, that's building songs. It's just different. Everybody's different.
Since the pandemic began, you've been doing some Facebook Live concerts on your page, as well as the Live from the Lost Highways group page. How's that been going?
Man, I like it, man. It's gained me a lot more new fans. I'm selling physical copies, which to me means the world. At first I had to get over this whole salesman syndrome, because, like, you know, I felt like I was on the shopping network, but like the Daystar religious network or one of those just networks where, like, for $10 easy you can, you know, now let's get back to, you know, it's like a PBS channel.
Right.
You know, it's like the best of this, and then go back to commercial and be like, okay, now if you want to call in. It kind of made me just get my chops up as far as like cutting the fat and getting down to playing a lot of music and playing in front of people. It's different. I've watched some people's shows and they can't get the hang of it, and they're not doing very good. And to me, it was a survival mechanism more than what I wanted to do. I was like, oh God, shows are completely shut down. What am I going to do for money? Because album sales alone were starting to stop. Album sales really never stopped, but it took a big dent not selling them live at your shows, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
And Jake Penrod told me about the Live from the Lost Highway, and I stepped up in there, and I took a couple times because I was real nervous, you know, and then, I don't know, it kind of took off. I like it now. It's,
Yeah, now you're pretty used to it, aren't you? You get on there and you're already taking a shot before I know it, seeing you on there.
That's another thing too. I get to be completely unprofessional.
Get that liquid courage in you.
Yeah. That is one thing though. I'm not incredibly professional at times. But man, it's fun to me because it's everybody's at their house or they're at their friend's house. They put me on the TV, you know, or listen on their phone while they're doing stuff. And it's just fun. It ain't hurting anybody. And, you know, I've directly talked to a few friends of mine who have almost been strictly told they can't do the live shows on their own page or affiliated with anyone else unless their booking agent gets 10% of what they make.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they don't talk about this. And that's why you don't see a lot of the bigger guys going live a whole bunch. One is probably because they suck. And they don't want you to know that they suck without all the bells and whistles and, you know.
Exactly, all the machines. All the smokes and the lights.
Yeah. And, yeah. So, or they, you know, or they're just a singer and you got to go hire your guitar player, you know.
Yeah.
And,
it's even less money for you.
But a lot of it's business too. They strictly just won't let them do it.
Okay.
And I think that's pretty lame. But I've been doing well, man, and I can't complain. I feel very blessed. I'm just trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Well, that's awesome, man, and we love seeing you on there. That's how we actually got to know you on that Lost Highway, and you getting on your own page. I mean, I think it's a bad thing that you know, all these artists are losing gigs, physical gigs around. But I told this to another artist in a podcast that I also think it's like a double-edged sword. It's bad that y'all are losing all these gigs, but I think it's good that y'all are building an even bigger audience by going live on social media platforms.
I like it, man. If you've got the personality for it, there's some that are just completely slaying it. But I've noticed, you know, my numbers are going up on my social, which before they're, you know, everyone's, oh, well, if you pay us X amount of money, we'll do it. I was like, hey, can't we do this organically?
Right.
So it's just been, I don't know, making the best of a bad situation. But I've seen, you know, some that are really good at it, some that aren't. And that's another thing in this business. You've just got to be able to pivot and change with everything that's doing it, man.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you're pretty good at it, man.
Well, thanks, man. I'm faking it till I make it, baby.
We left our kids and our home for the wild.
Thanks for listening. If y'all would like to know more about Jason James, including music, merch, and how to contact him, go to thejasonjamesband.com or search Jason James Band on all social media platforms. And as always, for all of your Texas country music, merch, events, and podcasts, go to reddirtmerch.com.
Tears are gone. Track of time is losing my mind. You're lost.